Hello, podcast listener. You're listening to a Halford and Brough podcast, and I'm using my podcast voice. You can listen to us on Google, Apple, Spotify. It's the Halford and Brough podcast, and thank you for listening.
Good morning, Vancouver. 7:03 on a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. It is Halford. It is Brough. It is Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. In case you are just joining us, maybe you hopped in your vehicle for your morning commute. Maybe you downloaded the Hour 1 podcast, listened to it in rapid time, and are now moving on to Hour 2. Whatever the case, thank you for joining us. We are very cognizant of the fact that the Vancouver Canucks have made sweeping changes across management and coaching. We have been speaking about it for the better part of the first hour of this program. Elliot Friedman joined us in Hour 1. If you want to download the podcast, Apple, Google, Spotify, it'll be up in a matter of moments. We are taking a brief sojourn into the world of football before we will get back into the Canucks talk throughout the remainder of this hour. And then again at 8 o'clock with Brendan Batchelor, the play-by-play voice of the Vancouver Canucks, is going to join us at 8 o'clock. But right now, it is time for our Monday morning quarterback, Mike Tannier, a presentation of the Clayton Public House on 188th Street and 56th Avenue in Surrey. You can visit them online at theclaytonpub.com. Mike Tannier, our NFL insider from Football Outsiders, joins us now. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
I always feel a little awkward coming on Canadian radio when there's big hockey news.
Yes, it is one of those things where like, well,
is Bruce Boudreau the right coach for the Canucks, Mike?
It's now time to pepper Mike Tannier with hockey questions.
They asked me a Grey Cup question on another station earlier, and I was like, listen, man, I do football. I do American NFL football.
Yeah, that's putting you on the spot more than asking you about hockey, to be quite honest.
Here's your answer, Mike. Hamilton really needs this. They're hosting the game, and I think they're going to get it done. That's all you need to say.
I'm stealing that.
Yeah, do it. So let's talk about the Seahawks game first, because
they
actually won, which was a nice change. Does that win change anything for you?
Not really. I mean, we know this team is capable of beating opponents, of beating divisional opponents, of beating, you know, good, not great opponents by the 49ers. And like the 49ers, it was good to see them run the ball, control the clock, do other things. But there were still enough stuff in that game, like the turnovers at the goal line, et cetera, in the red zone, that make you wonder and make you worry about this team. So, you know, it wasn't a complete statement win. It was just a reminder that, we have an all-pro quarterback and some other assets on this team, and we're not going to go away into the night like we're the Jacksonville Jaguars or something.
So I am terrible at predicting football games, and my lock of the week lost again. But I did mention last week, I think the Lions could win this one, because not because the Lions were showing signs that they were about to win a game. It was more that the Vikings are the perfect team to lose this game. What is up with the Vikings? And are you surprised that Mike Zimmer is still the head coach?
Well, I'm not surprised that Zimmer is the head coach and Spielman is the general manager, because they handle everything so professionally that you never notice how bad they are.
It's a good way of putting it.
Of like the bottoming out moment for the Minnesota Vikings, where they have been eroding from the inside for the last 3 or 4 years. They keep getting older. It's the same guys that you saw out there in 2017 and 2018. And, you know, they were great then, and then they were very good, and now they're pretty good. And they've had to let a lot of guys go, because when you keep all your veterans, that maxes out your cap, and Kirk Cousins takes up a lot of salary cap space, and the other veterans take up the cap space. So they're vulnerable to anybody. But yeah, I think Zimmer's one of those conservative coaches who doesn't get the most out of his talent. I think they love running a very vanilla offense that makes everybody look sort of okay, and means that they're, you know, it's a 3-point game at the end all the time, which means they get upset a lot. So, you know, kudos to the Lions, who were 7-4 against the spread and covering against everybody entering that game, because they found a team that wasn't going to come up and kick the big field goal at the end of the game against them, the way the Ravens and other teams did. They found a team that was going to lose in the final minute and a half, and that's what the Vikings did.
You know, it's funny, because when we looked at this week on the schedule and we looked at the calendar, it was hard not to look to Monday Night Football as the marquee game and what was going to be the preeminent story from the week in the NFL. So when you're looking back and you're saying, well, as we wait, what were some of the other big developments that unfurled? One of them was welcome back Arizona, welcome back Kyler Murray, kind of revolting to that position as maybe again the team to beat in the NFC if they ever weren't.
Right. And you know what? This season has been about everybody having a slump.
Yeah.
The Bills had a slump, and the Rams just came out of a slump. And the Cardinals were without Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins, and they went 2-1 for that stretch. It wasn't a slump. It was we can't win every game with our backup quarterback and without our top receiver. But look, we won a couple of them with Colt McCoy, with our defense, with, like, you know, tossing the screen and getting the yak and doing all that stuff. So now that they get these guys back, and they get a convincing win in the rain, on the road, in December, against a Bears team that usually plays everybody tough, even though they're not very good. This is a statement moving forward. Now, the Cardinals face the Rams next week. They do that, they've pretty much clinched the NFC West. They've clinched the playoffs. They're really in pole position for the first round bye. And it's all about peaking at the right time this year in the NFL. And this is a great time to be getting your quarterback back fully healthy and your top wide receiver back fully healthy.
So I know Jason's mentioned it already, but his lock of the week was Bengals over Chargers because he thought foolishly that he had figured out the Bengals or the Chargers.
Or perhaps the Chargers, yeah.
I love that you headlined this the Variance Bowl because that is exactly what it is. And Jason brought up another good point that the inconsistencies that have plagued them throughout the season played out in real time during that game.
During the game, yeah, it was very meta.
Yeah, it was unbelievable how bizarre that game was because Ruff texted me when the Chargers were up 24-0, and then I texted him back when the Bengals had made it 22-24, and I'm like, this is a perfect example of exactly what these teams are playing out in real time.
Yes. Yeah, and it was fun to watch, and I took the Chargers early in the game, but then I took the Bengals in the middle of the game. Like, they're going to come back. And, of course, as soon as I did that, then the Chargers came back because Mixon, who's been having a great season, fumbles right into the arms of a defender for a touchdown. But you know what? I was talking about this on another station. The AFC is loopy this year, and what you're going to see is you'll probably see the Bengals and or the Chargers as wild cards. They're probably – good chance they both get in as wild cards. Definitely one of them will get in as wild cards. They're going to be facing the Titans, who are an injury-plagued mess. The Ravens, who are an injury-plagued mess. They're going to get out there in early rounds, and they're potentially the Bills, who are very susceptible to upset. You really want to be the number one seed in the AFC because you do not want to face one of these teams that if they roll the dice and they get a natural 20 are going to destroy you in the first round of the playoffs.
It was another classic Steelers-Ravens game last night. If by that I mean it was tight and it came down to a pretty interesting decision at the end. Your thoughts on Harbaugh going for two and the win and then kind of acknowledging that he wanted to get that game over with either way because he had so many injuries in his secondary.
Yeah, that's it. You know, the analytics people say, going for two is the right call. Going for two is the right call. And I'm looking at it, it's like, you've got a Hall of Fame kicker. You can kick that extra point. You get the ball in overtime. You get one stop. You get to, like, the 44-yard line. You can win with Justin Tucker. But then Harbaugh did explain, Marlon Humphrey was out.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Smith was already out. Most of the secondary was really banged up. And he was losing guys on the offensive line as well, which means they weren't protecting Lamar Jackson. So, get it over with because you've got other games coming down the road. And you don't have the guys you need to do the things you have to do in overtime. So mix that with good analytics, and it made sense. The thing they didn't do is they didn't block T.J. Watt at all on that final play.
Yeah.
They let him come free. And that's a little loopy. I know it's the design of the play because he runs in and you throw it over him. But, man, it's T.J. Watt. Maybe you want to come up with a different play than that.
Mike, finally, before we let you go, Monday Night Football tonight, we've talked about it right up the top. It is a very, very tantalizing affair between the Bills and the Patriots. The Patriots are coming in the hotter of the two teams without question. This is basically for bragging rights in that division. And it's interesting that it's come down to this because, obviously, the Patriots have had a surprising season, whereas a lot of people expected the Bills to be in this spot, maybe even with a better record than they have going into Monday Night Football. Give us a preview for what to expect tonight.
Well, the Patriots are the tortoise in a conference full of hares. They don't go up and down. They do the same thing. And while they can lose to a team like the Buccaneers most of the time, they're beating all the teams they're supposed to. Now, the big story tonight is the weather. I'm disappointed because I thought we were going to get lake effect snow. It looks like we're getting a little bit of rain, but heavy winds. So it's going to be a wind-affected game coming out of Buffalo. That favors the Patriots, who are a ground-and-pound team, over the Buffalo Bills, who Josh Allen wants to throw his 100-mile-an-hour passes into 40-mile-an-hour winds, and that could be a real problem for them tonight. So I like the Patriots, and I really love the Patriots and the over if this is legal where you're at. They took that over way down to like 41 or 42 because there was a threat of snow. You can get the Patriots and over in a big-time parlay, and I think you sit back, enjoy the Mac Jones show, and sort of laugh all the way to the bank.
It is absolutely legal here. What's more, we now have single-game betting in Canada. We finally caught up to the rest of the world. Hurrah! So that's one. Two, Mike, thanks for doing this today. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the game tonight. It should be a good one. We'll talk again next Monday.
Absolutely. Take care and enjoy your week.
You too. Thanks. That's Mike Tannier, our Monday morning quarterback, brought to you by the Clayton Pub here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
So let's get back to the Canucks talk, with all due respect to Mike Tannier, who always does a great job breaking down the NFL. Our poll question today is, how are you feeling, Canucks fans? We're giving you three options. Are you relieved? Are you hopeful? Or are you sad? And then we also have the option for other, and please reply. A few people have said they're relieved and concerned. Relieved that changes have been made, but concerned about what might be done next. Mm-hmm. 56% of you say you're relieved. And I think that says a lot. I think it says that something needed to change. Something major needed to change.
Yep.
We have a text in from Irvin in English Bay who says, I was at the game on Saturday. Probably the saddest thing was the dude trying to start the wave in the third period while it was 3-1 for Pittsburgh and the crowd was not having it. Yeah, the crowd was not in a jovial, let's do the wave.
Wasn't getting really a wave kind of vibe
the
from
pina,
the crowd that night.
The Pina Colada song probably would not have been welcomed at that time.
No.
That was a nasty crowd. I had a couple buddies at the game and I texted one of them. I said, are you having fun? He said, just like one word answer, no. I am not having fun.
25 games in. You have the record that you have and you put forth the performance that you put forth. There is nothing that's going to incite people more than that, because what Saturday was a culmination of a quarter of a season of frustrations playing out in real time. Big time opponent comes in, right? Mm-hmm. It was more of a measuring stick game than the previous two, where the Canucks ground out wins against lousy teams like Montreal and Ottawa. If anything, it was a cold slap of reality, reminding the team just how far off they were from what a good, competitive, playoff-bound, potentially, NHL team looks like. So there was that. There was also Saturday night, Hockey Night in Canada, big stage, all of it. It was all building towards this, and you knew it and you felt it, which is why 56% of people are saying relief, because everybody knew this was coming and everybody saw it coming, and it's finally happened.
And it wasn't just that the Canucks got into penalty trouble. That's not the only reason they lost to the Penguins. It was a big part of it, and the Penguins punished the Canucks with the 5-on-3 advantage, took the 3-1 lead, scored twice in that scenario. But And look, you can quibble with the Tyler Motte penalty or whatever. The Canucks have had a few bad calls against them, but it's not the reason why they're in this hole. The most damning thing, again, I thought, was the third period when the Canucks had a chance to make a push and they really just showed nothing.
Yep.
There was never a moment in the game when you're like, the Canucks are going to press here. In fact, Pittsburgh scored the only goal of the third period, and Sidney Crosby scored the last goal against the Vancouver Canucks of the Jim Benning and Travis Green era in Vancouver.
Okay, I want to read a text here from Terry in Richmond. Just, I don't agree with what he's saying, but I know the sentiment is out there. And it's not like it's a harebrained text or dumb or anything. Terry writes, the circus called the Canucks continues. They're bringing in a guy who will be a lame duck coach next season. It's a knee-jerk reaction. They heard that Philly might hire Bruce Boudreau. By the way, Philly just fired Alain Vigneault. And it sounds as though Rick Tocchet may be on their radar. What a joke. This is a knee-jerk reaction. Now, I'm going to say this. We just had Elliot Friedman on the program. And say what you will about the ownership decisions that have been made over the last few years, Elliot made it sound very clear that this was in no way a knee-jerk reaction. That right from the start, when they saw that things weren't going great, they said, we want to be patient. We want to make a move. And we want to do what is not a knee-jerk reaction, but something that has, we don't want to have any long-term commitment, basically. We don't want to make the big organizational hire right now. So right. What I'll say is this. If the hire is what I think it is, there's actually a plan behind it. And we've laid it out for a couple reasons already with Boudreau, which is get offensive guys like Pettersson and Besser on track. Maybe stem the losing. Maybe have guys enjoy coming to the rink again and address the culture. I will also throw this in there. He's almost going to be like the offensive version of what Ken Hitchcock was at the end of Hitch's career. Because remember, the last 3 years that Hitch was in the NHL, he coached in St. Louis, he coached in Dallas, and he coached in Edmonton. And he was almost brought in to teach young guys how to play defense. Remember that? Like in Dallas, it was, they've got this freewheeling, open hockey team. Let's bring Hitch in and play Hitch hockey. I actually think that that's what Boudreaux is going to be in Vancouver. He's almost going to be like an offensive whisperer.
I think if you're going to hire a bridge coach, Bruce Boudreaux is a great bet. I think they felt that they needed to bring someone in. And maybe Brad Shaw just wasn't, it's just they just didn't see that, right? They wanted to bring someone in that had experience with star players, and Boudreaux has that. Mm-hmm. Someone who could uplift the room, and Boudreaux has that. And someone they didn't need to make a long-term commitment to, and Boudreaux is 66 years old. And he got a deal which essentially they're going to have to make a decision on him this offseason. Otherwise, he heads into next season as a lame duck head coach. Now, hopefully, ownership does not see his term next season as something that has to be played out because we've already paid for it, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully, the new GM or whoever it is or the new president of hockey ops has full control. And that's going to be one of the big questions for ownership today. Are you going to give someone full control? Are you going to let someone make all the decisions, or are you going to continue to insert yourself into the hockey decisions? Of all the people that I talk to and their concerns about the Canucks, and I wonder if ownership is aware of this, the number one thing they always come back to, and they can talk about, oh, the PK is terrible, or the power play is going on, or what's going on with Pettersson, or who should be the coach. It always comes back to, and yet there's the ownership.
And that's
right or wrong, that's the number one concern for fans.
Because right now, the plane that we are existing on is the head coaching decision's been made. By all accounts, it's been pretty well received. I'd say the majority of people are like, yeah, if this plays out the way that we think it's going to play out, it could be a smart, savvy hire. And then you stop that conversation and you say, but none of it means anything if it doesn't start at the managerial level where it's, I would imagine it has to be a fresh start. And it has to be someone that comes in and says, we have to undo a lot of the mistakes that were made, and we have to build. And that might not be the messaging today. When Aquilini and Smeal meet with the media, I'm very curious to see what the messaging is going to be, because the Boudreaux hire can be explained about eight different ways. I mean, hell, I'll just throw it out there. They could say, we brought in Bruce because we think he can turn this around. That could happen. I'd be stunned if that's the messaging, but Boudreaux has a history of going.
Maybe not stunned.
Maybe not stunned. Maybe not shocked. But look, you could say this is a guy that in Washington inherited in his first year a 6-14-1 team, turned it around, got to the playoffs, and was named Coach of the Year.
Yeah.
And you could go out and spin that narrative to people. You could. I'd be shocked if that was the thinking. Maybe not shocked, but I would be very stunned. But that is an option here in explaining the Boudreaux hire.
Tavi texts in, if anything, with this organization, besides the losing and the rough start, change was needed for the culture. Sometimes change is good. And I really think the players are thrilled for a fresh start. Yeah, the players are going to get asked about it, and they'll say probably the usual thing, and I feel responsible that Travis has lost his job. Mm-hmm. But listen, we've heard the whispers that Pettersson and Besser weren't thrilled with Travis Green. And I wouldn't be surprised if there was some tension between the head coach and the players. Do you not think Travis Green was probably really frustrated with Pettersson and Besser? He's like, you're killing me here.
Mm-hmm.
There was another text, unsigned text. Even if Pettersson and Besser bounce back after their horrible start, this puts a question mark on whether they have the heart to lead this team into the playoffs. I will say that there are a lot of people that have texted into this show before and said, Pettersson and Besser need a new coach. Well, they've got that now.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got one of the most offense-friendly coaches there is.
Yep. This is like no more excuses time for a lot of guys on this roster. No more excuses. Because Boudreaux's going to come in, and I don't think he's going to deviate from the style of coaching and the philosophy that he's had throughout his career, because he's won a ton of hockey games. Put it this way. You hire Bruce Boudreaux to do Bruce Boudreaux things. You're bringing him in for a very specific set of reasons. So for the guys that aren't producing now, the excuses are up. You don't have any reasons as to why you're not putting up boxcar stats or even more advanced ones.
Like, how many times are we going to hear the phrase up-tempo to describe Bruce Boudreaux's coaching style? Up-tempo, up-tempo.
Oh, countless. Countless times.
And one question that I have is, do the Canucks have the blue line, the puck movers on the blue line, to play an up-tempo style? I know they've got Hughes, and I know they've got Ekman-Larsson. I don't see those other guys, and I know Tyler Myers is known as a good puck-moving defenseman, but I don't see him as a guy that makes quick decisions. And a lot of it isn't skating, right? Like, that's not moving the puck. Up-tempo is boom, make a pass, boom, make a pass. Look at a guy, make the pass,
yep,
and know that the puck is always moving forward. You can always tell a team is in trouble when they make a lot of D-to-D passes, and that's what I've seen a lot from the Canucks.
Too much east-west.
I remember the Torts here, the number of D-to-D passes, they just played so slow. But you have to have good puck movers. And if you think about the Canucks going back into the 2010-11 season, like, you don't think of Dan Hamhuis. You wouldn't be like, what a puck-moving defenseman. The guy moved the puck, though. He made quick decisions. Sammy Salo, great first pass. They got the puck going. And I don't know if they've got the guys to do that consistently through the pairs. Will Jack Rathbone get called up to help? Maybe. But his passing needs work too, right? Like, he would give the puck away. A lot of that is like, under pressure, you make the right play. It doesn't have to be a complicated play. It doesn't have to be a long stretch pass. Remember what AV would always say?
Yeah.
Just be like, make the high percentage play, but make it quick.
I mean,
D, move the puck up. Can Tucker Pullman do that in any setting?
Well, all the questions that you're asking right now, that's what makes this Boudreaux hire so interesting, because he's the guy that can basically come in and say, if you want to play a style of game that has high octane, high impact, a lot of offense, you can't do it with the roster that you've given me. It won't work. And he can say that because the guy that created the team and is the guy that constructed it is gone.
Yeah.
You've got.
He can be super harsh and super honest.
It's almost carte blanche in terms of what you want to say and what you want to do as a coach. And that's probably the really tantalizing thing for him, why he would take a job that has very short term and a very, I would say, murky future, because you have no idea who your boss is. But Boudreaux took it, and he does get to do a lot of those things that we just mentioned.
Unsigned text here. Boudreaux will improve the breakout by having quick short passes, which helps the D-men. Green's system seemed to involve 80-foot passes. Yeah, there are a lot of those.
A lot of bombs.
But that was brought in as a response to the issues that they were having under Willie DeJardin. I remember talking to Jim Benning when Travis was first hired, and he said, yeah, Travis has some ideas on how we can get the puck moving out of our own end. That's so much of hockey.
Yep.
Right? Like, it really is. It's like the pass rush in football. The pass rush is basically the forecheck. Mm-hmm. And if you've got an offensive line that can protect and give the quarterback time to make a play, that's great. But mostly it's on the quarterback just to make the right decisions. Mm-hmm.
I know we're right up against it for time, but I do want to say this. When Boudreaux was in Minnesota, the one thing you got to understand is, by an offensive coach, it doesn't mean that they have one particular philosophy and just hammer that into whatever scenario or situation. Boudreaux's a really good hockey mind that thinks the game offensively. He thinks about ways to create an attack. So in Minnesota, I remember listening to an interview with him. One of the things that he did was he saw the strengths of the team, and he decided to tailor their offensive approach to, we're going to play below the goal line a lot. Because we're big and heavy and we're not that fast, we're going to get pucks in behind the line.
Mm-hmm.
And we have really good board guys. That was when Zach Parise was still like an elite boards guy.
Right.
And it wasn't like he said, we're going to take this run and gun thing that we did in Washington and make it work here. You saw it. What kind of team do I have?
Granlin, you're Ovechkin.
Yeah, like all of a sudden Eric Staal is going to be flying up and down the ice. Like, that's not going to happen. But he figured out a way to create offense with the pieces he was given. He'll do the same thing here, but the end result might also be him saying, we can't do half the things that we need to do to score goals because the defense isn't good enough in terms of moving the puck. That is a very the potential of that statement being said is high because you look at this defense and they do have issues moving the puck.
But in some ways, I think they just need to be told to do it. Just move it. Move it faster. Stop looking at the guy. Make a pass.
Okay, we're up against it for time. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation right here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. 7:35 on a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. Halford at Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Just a massive show so far. We are going to do the traditional sports radio resets because on days like today, when people are jumping in and out of listening, in and out of vehicles, maybe the podcast, you need to reset the news of the day. And that, of course, was that the Canucks made significant, and I mean significant, leadership and coaching changes late on Sunday night. General Manager Jim Benning, Assistant General Manager John Weisbrod, Head Coach Travis Green, and Assistant Coach Nolan Baumgartner have all been relieved of their duties. Coming in as the new hire, the one that we've spoken most about today, 66-year-old veteran head coach Bruce Boudreaux is now the head man. He'll be coaching tonight for the Vancouver Canucks as they host the Los Angeles Kings in a game that we have not mentioned more than once, and I just realized that in saying it in real time.
The return of Alex Edler.
Unfair to Alex Edler, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm. He's probably happy, though. He's like, I didn't want the attention. I don't love it.
Yeah. Now it's just going to be an ovation. That'll be a nice little video. He'll wave. But everyone is focused on, you know, everything else that's going on right now.
Daryl in Surrey texts in, I was at the game on Saturday, and the compete level was very obvious that Pittsburgh was more hungry. As for Pettersson, good player, but was never a big fan. I think that the league has figured him out. He is very easy to knock off his skates, and teams know to keep the body on him until he has the ability to remain on his feet. He will not be a consistent threat. We're going to find out a lot about Pettersson. Bruce Boudreaux is a hire that is tailored for offensive players like Elias Pettersson. If there was a personality clash with Travis Green and some of the young players, and there were whispers that there was, and you wouldn't be surprised to hear that, considering how the season has gone and how previous seasons have often gone. If there was a personality clash that was somehow hampering Elias Pettersson's enthusiasm, then that excuse is gone. This is an opportunity for Elias Pettersson to get his game back, but also for the Canucks and whoever's ultimately in charge to watch what's going on, because at some point they're going to have to ask the question, is Pettersson the right guy to build around? Mm-hmm. They gave him a 3-year contract, and at this point it's looking like, thank God, it wasn't the 8-year deal
right
that a lot of people had been clamoring for. Now, maybe Pettersson gets his game back, and ultimately they should have signed him to an 8-year deal. But I think if you were to ask most fans right now, hey, are you happy the Canucks only went 3 years with Elias Pettersson? Their answer is probably like, yes, very.
Now, it's not just about Pettersson. I'd say almost every player on this roster, save Thatcher Demko and Quinn Hughes, this is going to be a real referendum on what they are, what they've been under Travis Green, if this was a Travis Green thing or if this wasn't. And I'll say this, Green rarely spoke out about roster construction. But on Saturday, in the aftermath of that 4-1 loss to Pittsburgh, this exchange happened. Do we have the audio ready? Just listen to it. It ain't long, but there's a lot there.
You think you've got the personnel that...
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's what we have here, so...
That was more telling than probably 4 years worth of deflecting questions about roster construction.
He initially said yes, but then he felt the need to add, well, it's what we've got here.
Now, it is very difficult for a head coach who was in Travis Green's position to quibble or to take shots at his roster construction because his boss was the guy that constructed the roster. And in ways, he probably had some input as to the guys that were coming in. Now, ultimately, he didn't have the final input. That was Jim Benning. But they're all gone. Boudreaux theoretically can come in and try and implement a lot of different things to kickstart guys offensively, but can also say, here are the things that you need to do to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have the right pieces to do those things. Now, someone just texted, Burke texted in talking about, this is a good point. He writes, famous UCLA basketball coach John Wooden published a book about the success of a coach. Not basketball, just coaching. He states that a good coach tailors his strategy over the skills and abilities of the player. So he takes a look, he sees what he has to work with, and then he goes about strategizing. He doesn't come in with a philosophy and then force the pieces to do it. That's what Boudreaux is going to look at, I would presume, and that would be his goal based on...
Was that text meant as a criticism of the hire in that they're just hiring an offensive coach or what?
No, I think what he said is the idea would be if you're a good coach,
mm-hmm.
you take a look at the players that you have and you say, how do I maximize the most out of what the, because they have skills and strengths and some things they're not good at.
Right.
How do I accentuate the skills and strengths and minimize their deficiencies? As opposed to, this is the style that we're playing.
Do you remember
Figure it out.
Do you remember when we had that poll question over the offseason? And it was the question was, which style should the Canucks play? And we went with the two extremes just to get what people mostly felt. The options were run and gun versus trap it up. So trap hockey. I think it was like overwhelming, like maybe around 80% said run and gun. Mm-hmm. And then I think one of the most interesting quotes we got from Travis Green this season was he said, we're not a run-and-gun team,
right.
To which a lot of people responded, then what the heck are you?
And they didn't have an identity through 25 games of the year. Really, they didn't. I had no idea what I don't want to say it like this, but I had no idea what their purpose was. I know fundamentally it's a hockey team trying to win hockey games, but they didn't have any defining characteristics where you say, when times are tough, this is what you can rely on. It used to just be they would trot out the cliches like we need to work harder than the opponent. I'm like, that's not a philosophy. That's a goal that you hope to achieve, but you need to have like a very specific way that you play the game. And if you don't have it, you're lost.
Scott texts in, I'd love to know the success rate of breakout passes from D-men not named Quinn Hughes that successfully give the Canucks zone entries. Bit of a funny story.
Okay.
I was watching the game on Saturday, and because I don't have to work Sunday, I got into the whiskey, and I had a few drinks, and in the third period, Oliver Ekman-Larsson made a pass up to a Canuck forward that was just like a really sharp pass. That Canuck forward automatically, like quickly made another pass, and the Canucks got a scoring chance. Mm-hmm. I yelled at the TV, that's what happens when you move the puck. You get chances. You have to move the puck. You have to do it quickly. Will the Canucks be able to move the puck with this defensive group? Yes, you like the puck-moving ability mm-hmm. of Quinn Hughes and Oliver Ekman-Larsson. The rest of the guys, I think you're kind of like, can they do it?
So what happens is you end up putting those guys in positions to do things that their skill set might not.
Maybe you can put the forwards in a position where the D-men don't have to make such long passes where the passes are just easy. Maybe there's some more high-percentage passes that you can make.
Perhaps. But
now,
does that lend itself to playing, quote-unquote, up-tempo? We don't know.
Here's the thing. Travis Green has probably thought of this. It's not like he's like, move the puck, eh? Clearly the book was out on the Canucks that the way you beat the Canucks or one of the keys to beating the Canucks was you forecheck the heck out of them.
Yep.
You just go after them. And people say like, well, you can have a puck mover on this pairing and then he can carry the other guy. Not really, because teams are pretty smart. Like they know which corner to dump the puck into. Mm-hmm. They know which guys to pick on. And if I'm a coach and I'm doing the pre-scout of the team, a phrase that I hate because you can just say scouting the team. You don't have to say the pre-scout at any rate.
Yep.
I look at a guy like Tucker Poolman. I say, you put that puck in his corner. He cannot make a pass.
Right.
He's gonna more often than not, he's going to turn it over. Or at the very least, he's just going to flip it out and you're going to get it. But you pressure those defensemen. Until the Canucks are able to figure out how to get out of their own end cleanly, they are going to struggle because any team will.
Jeff from Mission texted in. Do we have any of the Bruce Boudreau audio from when he appeared on the station over the last couple of weeks? I'll let you guys try and track some down because Jeff texted in about it. He said Boudreau touched on a lot of this in previous interviews. He had been watching the Canucks for a while. You say a coach wants to evaluate him. Maybe he's being evaluated for a while. The team has obviously been in contact with him for a while. Yes. To answer your questions, Jeff, all of those things are true. This has been percolating for a long time.
I'm sure he's been sending them ideas.
Yeah.
He's been saying, hey, if you do this, then maybe you'll have more success.
They did not call Bruce Boudreau Saturday night and ask if he wanted to be the head coach starting Sunday. Jeff went on to say it feels like dirty business, but that's the way the NHL works.
No, it's not dirty business. It's smart business.
That's how things work.
Bruce Boudreau is not under contract to anyone else. They can reach out to whoever they want.
Elliot Friedman laid it out pretty thoroughly and clearly that this has been in the works for an awfully long time. When Elliot came on in the 6 o'clock hour, by the way, hour one podcast is available for download right now. This is the way things work. If you're going to be methodical and you're going to take your time and you're going to try and execute a plan mid-season while your team is playing games, then yeah, you're having pretty in-depth conversations with candidates while you have guys already serving in their current jobs. Just the reality of the situation.
Daniel and Comox, I'm just excited to see an offensive coach bring out something in this team. Or not. Gives the fan base a reason to watch games again if it's at least fun. It is something to watch. Mm-hmm. And I think Mike and I were both lamenting the fact that the playoffs are a major long shot at this point, and we've still got to have a show. We've still got to cover this team on a game-to-game basis.
The tagline now is Canucks hockey. It's something to watch.
Yeah, it's something different.
Yeah,
it's a new coach. He's going to have new things that he does. And again, like the biggest part of this season, for me at least, is salvaging Elias Pettersson, and to a lesser degree, Brock Besser. But Pettersson's play has fallen off so much that I don't even recognize him out on the ice. And if Bruce Boudreau, even if the Canucks go, 500 under Bruce Boudreau and don't even come close to making the playoffs, if Pettersson returns to form, it's probably a good hire.
That's a win. Do we have any of his audio? Were you guys able to find any? I'd be very curious to what he was saying on this. No, nothing? Okay.
Trevor, the podcast listener, texts in, I like Boudreau as a short-term hire. I'm not sure he's the guy to take us to the cup, but this team isn't close to that anyway. I'm just hoping he can inject some life back into the locker room while the next GM cleans up the mess.
We have not talked a lot about the job that is facing the next general manager of the Vancouver Canucks. We spent a lot of time talking about the coaching and the on-ice product, in part because we've got the answer. Bruce Boudreau is the new head coach. That's what's happening. As we go along here, the general manager position, which quite frankly is a way bigger and way more important hire, all due respect to Boudreau, the next architect of this team has got such a task ahead of him because there are, and I used the word referendums earlier, there are referendums on so many of these guys that are currently employed by the Vancouver Canucks, and there are so many decisions that need to happen contractually this offseason and the next. Brock Besser is a massive decision for the next guy that comes in. Huge. You can't understate that. Your captain, Bo Horvat. Your leading scorer, JT Miller. Big, profound decisions have to be made on all of these guys. And right now, you have a five-man group that is Stan Smeal. So in case anybody missed it, he's now the interim general manager. Ryan Johnson, who gets a promotion from the chair as the Abbotsford Canucks general manager, is now the interim assistant general manager of the Canucks, essentially working as Smeal's assistant. Daniel and Henrik Sedin are in the mix. And Chris Gear, one of the few remaining guys from the triumvirate of Benning, Gear, and Weisbrod, he sticks around as well. So you've got five minds working together collaboratively in the interim while the club goes out and presumably looks for the next architect. I go back to what happened in Montreal, and Jeff Gorton was the first hire, and that was in a presidential executive role, the overseer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you're going in with optimism to hearing Francesco Aquilini and Stan Smeal speak this afternoon, it's that the end goal is to find someone that brings clarity and communication and can relay that vision to every wing of the hockey team. So as Elliot mentioned earlier,
communication
scouting department
is massive. Just
scouting department, coaching department, front office, everything, analytics department. Everyone has the same vision and the same goal.
And you need to communicate a vision, get the belief in your vision, which doesn't happen overnight. It's not like you deliver one speech and everyone's like, that's a guy I'm going to follow. Right? You have to have lots of meetings with everyone in your organization. Get them on the same page. And if people aren't on the same page, goodbye.
Now, another thing.
And you need to energize and empower the people below you. Mm-hmm. Will that happen with the Canucks? I don't know. It's a tall task. And that's why today's media availability with the owner, Francesco Aquilini, who, again, hasn't had a formal press conference since Trevor Linden was introduced.
Yes, not amicably departed.
He was introduced as the president of Hockey Ops, and that seems like a long time ago.
So when we talk about, you know, when we talk about a new mind coming in as the overseer, there's going to be a question today. And I'll be very curious to see what the answer is, and I think it's going to be very similar to what Jeff Molson answered in Montreal last week. Are you afraid of the word rebuild? Because Molson embraced that word. He said, I'm not afraid of it.
Aren't they in a very different position than the Canucks? Well, maybe not very. I guess they've got young guys. They got Suzuki and Caulfield.
They're in the exact same situation as the Canucks because the new guy coming in has to decide what I'm inheriting.
Mm-hmm.
What am I going to do with this? Because it's not all good in Montreal.
Don't you think it's going to be so hard for the ownership group that was so optimistic about this team heading into the season to admit, hey, we were wrong. Like, not just a little bit wrong, but really wrong.
I think it's
going to take a long time for them to wrap their heads around that situation.
The real difference between the Montreal and the Vancouver situations is that they had success last year, and their owner did not come out prior to the season proclaiming that they had goals for that roster. They knew that they had problems. They knew the Carey Price situation, the Shea Weber situation, things out of their control. But in the same breath, Molson looked at it and said, if the new guy comes in and says, we need to tear this thing down and start again, then I'm willing to embrace that. And that's a big admission from the owner. Because you had a team that months ago was in the Stanley Cup final.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden it's, well, if a guy comes in that I trust and says, this ain't working.
The Canucks didn't lose Shea Weber and Carey Price, though. They didn't lose a player like, I know Carey Price is going to be
back.
Those
are the big fundamental differences between
the two
situations.
But they didn't lose Shea Weber. Mm-hmm. I think it was easier for Jeff Molson to say that than it would be for the Aquilinis to admit that what's been constructed,
it might be more difficult,
fundamentally flawed.
It might be more difficult to say from the Canucks' perspective, but that doesn't mean that they shouldn't say it. Tough decisions sometimes need to be made.
Well, I think if I were to bet, I would bet they were going to say, well, we'll see. Maybe not those exact words, but this is why they're bringing in Boudreau, to see how wrong they were. Because his job is to save Elias Pettersson or to salvage Elias Pettersson right now. Here's another text. This one's from Tanbeer. I wonder what Boudreau will think of the leadership group in the room. He's coached some great players. Yeah, and he's coached three different teams. He's coached a lot of strong personalities, too. I very much wonder what he will think of the leadership group in that room. And he's going to be counted on to provide intelligence and information to whoever the new management group is and to ownership to tell them what he really thinks. And what I do like about this, here's the thing. I know Bruce Boudreau wanted to get back into the game. And I know he's never won a Stanley Cup as a head coach. Mm-hmm. So to a certain degree, he wants to keep his job. But he's not like a young coach who still has years and years left in the game. Bruce has made a lot of money already. I'm sure he's quite comfortable already. I'm sure he's going to be comfortable just delivering the truth. Mm-hmm. And he'll be more comfortable than a young coach in going, hey, here's what I think. If you don't like it, then I don't really care. But here's what I think. He's not just going to tell, hopefully, he's not going to just tell management and ownership what they want to hear. And I think that has been a problem with this ownership group. They've heard what they want to hear. So, for example, you can retool and be competitive at the same time. No, you don't need to wait years and years for a competitive team. Let's hit the gas now. Isn't that an easier message to hear than you're going to have to wait and there's going to be a lot of losing?
Yeah. That's what I mean. And I go back to the Montreal thing, and I'm like, this was a team that was still hitting the gas pedal. Like, when they lost Kokiniemi and Deneau, they traded to get Dvorak right away. Like, they weren't interested in doing a rebuild this summer. Like, Mark Bergevin still had his foot on the gas. Like, we're going to be competitive. We just went to the Stanley Cup final. I just think that at a certain stage, you have to stop hearing what you want to hear and start trying to embrace reality as much as possible. And the only way you can do that is to get out of your bubble sometimes. So the guys that have been around for a long time that you've developed a rapport with and a chemistry with, and you all kind of have the same vision and see the same things, that's why organizations go outside the organization sometimes. Mm-hmm. Businesses hire people from the outside to take a look objectively and say, you've been doing this for a long time. Maybe you need to change that up.
Mike, the All Black texts in, I think over and above anything else, perhaps even results, this fan base just wants to see a structured plan with the end goal being a Stanley Cup and measurable progress toward that goal year over year. Zero progress made in 8 years. Yeah, they're still a bad team. They're still one of the worst teams in the NHL. Brendan Batchelor is going to join us next. He was on the call for Saturday's game, the 4-1 loss to Pittsburgh at Rogers Arena, and it was not a happy crowd at Rogers Arena. The official financial sponsor of Halford and Brough is ZLC Financial. It's your one-stop solution for all your financial and retirement needs in Vancouver. At ZLC, they follow a strict process. There are 5 steps. You analyze, you plan, you implement, you review, and then you repeat it. That's good advice. To learn more, visit ZLC.net. And remember, advice is only as good as the person you ask.